Hello, and welcome to Harry Potter and the Methods of Rationality, the podcast. Written by Eliezer Yudkowsky, read by Iniash Brodsky, based on the works of J.K. Rowling. Chapter 6, The Planning Fallacy. Some people would have waited until after their first trip to Diagon Alley. Bag of Element 79, Harry said, and withdrew his hand, empty, from the moleskin pouch. Most people would have at least waited to get their wands first. Bag of Okane, said Harry. The heavy bag of gold popped into his hand. Harry withdrew the bag, then plunged it again into the moleskin pouch. He took out his hand, put it back in, and said, Bag of Tokens of Economic Exchange. This time his hand came out empty. Harry Potter had gotten his hands on at least one magical item. Why wait? Professor McGonagall, Harry said to the bemused witch strolling beside him, Can you give me two words, one word for gold and one word for something else that isn't money, in a language that I wouldn't know? But don't tell me which is which. Ahava and Zahav, said McGonagall. That's Hebrew, and the other word means love. Thank you, Professor. Bag of Ahava. Empty. Bag of Zahav. And it popped into his hand. Zahav is gold, Harry questioned, and McGonagall nodded. Harry thought over his collected experimental data. It was only the most crude and preliminary sort of effort, but it was enough to support at least one conclusion. This doesn't make any sense! The witch beside him lifted a lofty eyebrow. Problems, Mr. Potter? I just falsified every single hypothesis I had. How can it know that bag of 115 galleons is okay, but not bag of 90 plus 25 galleons? It can count, but it can't add? It can understand nouns, but not noun phrases that mean the same thing? The person who made this probably didn't speak Japanese, and I don't speak any Hebrew, so it's not using their knowledge, and it's not using my knowledge. Harry waved a hand helplessly. The rules seem sorta consistent, but they don't mean anything. I'm not even going to ask how a pouch ends up with voice recognition and natural language understanding when the best artificial intelligence programmers can't get the fastest supercomputers to do it after 35 years of hard work. Harry gasped for breath. But what is going on? Magic, said Professor McGonagall. She shrugged. That's just a word! Even after you tell me that, I can't make any new predictions. It's exactly like saying phlogiston, or elan vital, or emergence, or complexity. Professor McGonagall laughed out loud. But it is magic, Mr. Potter.
Harry slumped over a little.
With respect, Professor McGonagall, I'm not quite sure you understand what I'm trying to do here. With respect, Mr. Potter, I'm quite sure I don't. Unless, this is just a guess, mind, you're trying to take over the world? No. I mean, yes. Well, no! I think I should perhaps be alarmed that you have trouble answering the question. Harry glumly considered the Dartmouth Conference on Artificial Intelligence in 1956. It had been the first conference ever on the topic, the one which had coined the phrase artificial intelligence. They had identified key problems, such as making computers understand language, learn, and improve themselves. They had suggested, in perfect seriousness, that significant advances on these problems might be made by 10 scientists working together for 2 months. No, chin up. You're just starting on the problem of unraveling all the secrets of magic. You don't actually know whether it's going to be too difficult to do in 2 months. And you really haven't heard of other wizards asking these sorts of questions or doing this sort of scientific experimenting? Harry asked again. It just seemed so obvious to him. Then again, it'd taken more than 200 years after the invention of the scientific method before any Muggle scientists thought to systematically investigate what a human 4-year-old could or couldn't understand. They could have found out in the 18th century, but no one even thought to look until the 20th. So you couldn't really blame the much smaller Wizarding World for not investigating the retrieval charm. McGonagall, after pursing her lips for a moment, shrugged. I'm still not sure what you mean by scientific experimenting, Mr. Potter. As I said, I've seen Muggle-born students try to get Muggle science to work inside Hogwarts, and people invent new charms and potions every year. Harry shook his head. Technology isn't the same thing as science at all, and trying lots of different ways to do something isn't the same as experimenting to figure out the rules. There were plenty of people who tried to invent flying machines by trying out lots of things with wings, but only the Wright brothers had built a wind tunnel. How many Muggle-raised children do you get at Hogwarts every year? McGonagall looked thoughtful for a moment. Around 10 or so? Harry missed a step and almost tripped over his own feet. 10?! The Muggle world had a population of 6 billion and counting. If you were one in a million, there were 12 of you in New York and 1,000 more in China. It was inevitable that the Muggle world would produce some 11-year-olds who could do calculus. Harry knew he wasn't the only one. He'd met other prodigies in math competitions. In fact, he'd been thoroughly trounced by competitors who probably spent literally all day practicing math problems and who'd never read a science fiction book and would burn out completely before puberty and never amount to anything in their future lives because they just practiced known techniques instead of learning to think creatively. Harry was something of a sore loser. But in the wizarding world, 10 Muggle-raised children per year who'd all ended their Muggle educations at the age of 11? And McGonagall might be biased, but she had claimed that Hogwarts was the largest and most eminent wizarding school in the world, and it only educated up to the age of 17. Professor McGonagall undoubtedly knew every last detail of how you went about turning into a cat, but she seemed to have literally never heard of the scientific method. To her, it was just Muggle magic, and she didn't even seem curious about what secrets might be hiding behind the natural language understanding of the retrieval charm. That left two possibilities, really. Possibility one, magic was so incredibly opaque, convoluted, and impenetrable that even the wizards and witches had tried their best to understand, they'd made little or no progress and eventually given up, and Harry would do no better. Or, Harry cracked his knuckles in determination, but they only made a quiet sort of clicking sound, rather than echoing ominously off the walls of Diagon Alley. Possibility two, he'd be taking over the world. Eventually, perhaps not right away. That sort of thing did sometimes take longer than 2 months. Muggle science hadn't gone to the moon in the first week after Galileo. But Harry still couldn't stop the huge smile that was stretching his cheeks so wide they were starting to hurt. He'd always been frightened of ending up as one of those child prodigies that never amounted to anything and spent the rest of their lives boasting about how cool they'd been at age 10. But then, most adult geniuses never amounted to anything either. There were probably, like, 1,000 people as intelligent as Einstein for every actual Einstein in history, because they hadn't gotten their hands on the one thing you absolutely needed to achieve greatness. They'd never found an important problem. "You're mine now," Harry thought at the walls of Diagon Alley, and all the shops and items, and all the shopkeepers and customers, and all the lands and people of Wizarding Britain, and all the wider Wizarding world, and the entire greater universe, of which Muggle scientists understood so much less than they believed. "I, Harry James Potter Evans Varys, do now claim this territory in the name of science!" Lightning and thunder completely failed to flash and boom in the cloudless skies. "What are you smiling about?" inquired McGonagall, warily and wearily. "I'm wondering if there's a spell to make lightning flash in the background whenever I make an ominous resolution," explained Harry. He was carefully memorizing the exact words of his ominous resolution so that future history books would get it right. "I have a distant feeling I ought to be doing something about this," sighed McGonagall. "Ignore it, it'll go away." "Ooh, shiny!" Harry put the thoughts of world conquest temporarily on hold and skipped over to a shop with an open display, and Professor McGonagall followed. Harry had now bought his potions, ingredients, and cauldron, and, oh, a few more things. Items that seemed like good things to carry in Harry's bag of holding, aka Moke Super Pouch QX31 with undetectable extension charm, retrieval charm, and widening lip. Smart, sensible purchases. Harry genuinely didn't understand why McGonagall was looking so suspicious. Right now, Harry was in a shop whose storefront rated the twisting main street of Diagon Alley. The store had an open front with merchandise laid out on slanted wooden displays, guarded only by slightly gray glows and a young-looking salesgirl in a much shortened version of witch's robes that exposed her knees and elbows. Harry was examining the wizarding equivalent of a first aid kit, the Emergency Healing Pack Plus. There were 2 self-tightening tourniquets, a stabilization potion, which would slow blood loss and prevent shock, a syringe of what looked like liquid fire, which was supposed to drastically slow circulation in a treated area while maintaining oxygenation of the blood for up to 3 minutes, if you needed to prevent a poison from spreading through the body. White cloth that could be wrapped over a part of the body to temporarily numb pain. Plus any number of other items that Harry totally failed to comprehend, like the Dementor Exposure Treatment, which looked and smelled like ordinary chocolate. Or the Baffle Snaffle Counter, which looked like a small quivering egg and carried a placard showing how to jam it up someone's nostril. "A definite buy at 5 galleons, wouldn't you agree?" Harry said to McGonagall, and the teenage salesgirl hovering nearby nodded eagerly. Harry had predicted McGonagall to make some sort of approving remark about his prudence and preparedness. What he was getting instead could only be described as the evil eye. "And just why," said Professor McGonagall with rather heavy skepticism, "do you expect to need a healer's kit, young man?" After the unfortunate incident at the potion store, McGonagall was trying to avoid seeing Mr. Potter while anyone else was nearby. Harry's mouth opened and closed. I don't expect to need it. It's just in case. Just in case of what? Harry's eyes widened. You think I'm planning to do something dangerous, and that's why I want a medical kit? The look of grim suspicion and ironic disbelief that McGonagall gave him was answer enough. Great Scott! Harry said. This was an expression he'd learned from the mad scientist Doc Brown in Back to the Future. Were you also thinking that when I bought the feather-falling potion, the gillyweed, and the bottle of food and water pills? Yes. Harry shook his head in amazement. Just what sort of plan do you think I have going here? I don't know, McGonagall said darkly, but it ends either in you delivering a ton of silver to Gringotts or in world domination. World domination is such an ugly phrase. I prefer to call it world optimization. This failed to reassure Professor McGonagall, who was still giving him the look of doom. Wow, Harry said, realizing that she was serious. You really think that? You really think I'm planning to do something dangerous? Yes. Like that's the only reason anyone would ever buy a first aid kit? Don't take this the wrong way, Professor McGonagall, but what sort of crazy children are you used to dealing with? Gryffindors, spat McGonagall, the word carrying a freight of bitterness and despair that fell like an eternal curse on all youthful heroism and high spirits. Deputy Headmistress Professor Minerva McGonagall, Harry said, putting his hand sternly on his hips. I am not going to be in Gryffindor. At this point, McGonagall interjected something about how if he was, she would figure out how to kill a hat. Which strange remark Harry let pass without comment, though the salesgirl seemed to be having a sudden coughing fit. I am going to be in Ravenclaw, and if you really think that I'm planning to do something dangerous, then with respect, you don't understand me at all. I don't like danger. It is scary. I am being prudent. I am being cautious. I am preparing for unforeseen contingencies. Like my parents used to sing to me, be prepared. That's the Boy Scouts marching song, be prepared. As through life you march along, don't be nervous, don't be flustered, don't be scared. Be prepared. Harry's parents had in fact only ever sung him those particular lines of that Tom Lehrer song, and Harry was blissfully unaware of the rest. McGonagall's stance had slightly softened, though mostly when Harry had reminded her that he was heading for Ravenclaw. What sort of contingency do you imagine this kit might prepare you for, young man? One of my classmates gets bitten by a horrible monster, and as I scramble frantically in my moleskin pouch for something that could help her, she looks at me sadly and with her last breath says, why weren't you prepared? And then she dies, and I know, as her eyes close, that she won't ever forgive me. Harry heard the salesgirl gasp, and he looked up to see her staring at him with her lips pressed tight. Then the young woman turned and fled into the deeper store. What? Professor McGonagall reached down and took Harry's hand in hers, gently but very firmly, and pulled Harry out of the main street of Diagon Alley, leading him into a byway between two shops that was paved in dirty bricks and which dead-ended in a wall of solid black dirt. The tall witch pointed her wand at the main street and spoke, Quietus! And a screen of silence descended around them, blocking out all the street noises. What did I do wrong? Then the witch turned and sent Harry with a full-powered, icy glare. I will thank you to remember, Mr. Potter, that there was a war in Wizarding Britain not 10 years ago, and that everyone here has lost someone, and that talking about friends dying in your arms is not done! I didn't mean to... The inference dropped like a falling stone into Harry's exceptionally vivid imagination. The war had ended 10 years ago, so that girl would have been 8 or 9 years old, at most, when... I'm sorry, I didn't mean to! Harry choked up and turned away to run from McGonagall's cold stare, but there was a wall of dirt blocking his way and he didn't have his wand yet. I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm sorry! There came a heavy sigh from behind him. I know you are, Mr. Potter. Harry dared to peek behind him. The anger was gone from Professor McGonagall's face. I'm sorry, Harry said again, feeling absolutely wretched. I shouldn't have said that. Did anything like that happen to... And then Harry shut his lips and slapped a hand over his mouth for good measure. McGonagall's face grew a little sadder. You must learn to think before you speak, Mr. Potter. Otherwise you'll go through life without many friends. That has been the fate of many a Ravenclaw, and I hope it will not be yours. Harry wanted to just run away. He wanted to pull out a wand and erase the whole thing from McGonagall's memory. be back with her outside the shop again. Make it didn't happen. But to answer your question, said McGonagall, no, nothing like that has ever happened to me. Her face twisted. Certainly, I've watched a friend breathe their last breath once or twice or a few times. But not one of them ever cursed me as they died, and I never thought that they wouldn't forgive me. What in Merlin's name possessed you to say such a thing, Harry Potter? Why would you even think it? Tears were creeping down Harry's cheeks. I'm sorry, I shouldn't have said anything to you. I'm sorry. McGonagall drew in a tight breath. I know you're sorry. What I don't understand is why an 11-year-old boy is thinking about such things. Did you really decide to buy a 5-galleon healer's kit to carry in a 15-galleon pouch because you're convinced that otherwise your classmates will curse you as they die? Harry swallowed. It's just that I always try to imagine the worst thing that could happen. And maybe he'd also been joking around a little bit, but he would rather have bitten off his own tongue than say that now. Why? So I can stop it from happening. Mr. Potter. McGonagall's voice trailed off. Then she sighed and knelt down beside him. Mr. Potter, she said, gently now, it's not your responsibility to take care of the students at Hogwarts. It's mine. I won't let anything bad happen to you or anyone else. Hogwarts is the safest place in all Wizarding Britain, and Madame Pomfrey has a full healer's office. You don't need a healer's kit. But I do! Harry burst out. Nowhere is perfectly safe! And what if my parents have a heart attack or get in an accident when I go home for Christmas? Madame Pomfrey won't be there. I'll need a healer's kit of my own. What in Merlin's name? Said McGonagall. She stood up and looked down at Harry, an expression torn between concern and annoyance. There's no need to think about such terrible things, Mr. Potter. Harry's expression twisted up into bitterness at hearing that. Yes, there is! If you don't think, you don't just get hurt yourself. You end up hurting other people. Professor McGonagall opened her mouth, then closed it. She rubbed the bridge of her nose, looking thoughtful. Mr. Potter, if I were to offer to stay quiet and listen to you for a while, is there anything you'd like to talk to me about?
About what?
About why you're convinced that you always have to be on your guard against terrible things happening to you.
Harry stared at her in puzzlement. That was a self-evident axiom. Well, Harry said slowly. He tried to organize his thoughts. How could he explain himself to McGonagall when she didn't even know the basics?
Muggle researchers have found that people are always very optimistic. Like, they say something will take 2 days and it takes 10. Or they say it'll be 2 months and it takes over 35 years. Like, they ask students for times by which they were 50% sure, 75% sure, and 99% sure they'd complete their homework. And only 13%, 19%, and 45% of the students finished by those times. And they found that the reason was that when they asked people for their best case estimates if everything went as well as possible, and their average case estimates if everything went as normal, they got back answers that were statistically indistinguishable. See, if you ask someone what they expect in the normal case, they visualize what looks like the line of maximum probability at each step along the way. Namely, everything going according to plan, without any mistakes or surprises. But actually, since more than half the students didn't finish by the time they were 99% sure they'd be done, reality usually delivers results a little worse than the worst-case scenario. It's called the planning fallacy, and the best way to fix it is to ask how long things took the last time you tried them. That's called using the outside view instead of the inside view. But when you're doing something new and can't do that, you just have to be really, really, really pessimistic. Like, so pessimistic that reality actually comes out better than you expected about as often and as much as it comes out worse. It's actually really hard to be so pessimistic that you stand a decent chance of undershooting real life. Like, I make this big effort to be gloomy, and I imagine one of my classmates getting bitten, but what actually happens is that the surviving Death Eaters attack the whole school to get at me. But on a happier note... Stop! McGonagall said. Harry stopped. He was just about to point out that at least they knew the Dark Lord wouldn't attack, since he was dead. I think I might not have made myself clear, McGonagall said carefully. Did anything happen to you personally that would scare you?
What happened to me personally is only anecdotal evidence, Harry explained to her. It doesn't carry the same weight as a replicated, peer-reviewed journal article about a controlled study with random assignment, many subjects, large effect sizes, and strong statistical significance. McGonagall pinched the bridge of her nose, inhaled, and exhaled. I would still like to hear about it, she said.
Harry said. He took a deep breath.
There'd been some muggings in our neighborhood, and my mother asked me to return a pan she'd borrowed to a neighbor 2 blocks down. And I said I didn't want to because I might get mugged. And she said,
Harry, don't say things like that.
Like thinking about it would make it happen. So if I didn't talk about it, I would be safe. I tried to explain it to her, and she made me carry over the pan anyway. I was too young to know how statistically unlikely it was for a mugger to target me, but I was old enough to know that not thinking about something doesn't stop it from happening. So I was really scared.
Nothing else? McGonagall said after a pause, when it became clear that Harry was done. There isn't anything else that happened to you.
I know it doesn't sound like much, Harry defended, but it was just one of those critical life moments, you know? I mean, I knew that not thinking about something doesn't stop it from happening. I knew that, but I could see that Mom really thought that way.
Harry stopped, struggling with the anger that was starting to rise up again when he thought about it.
She wouldn't listen. I tried to tell her. I begged her not to send me out, and she laughed it off. Everything I said, she treated like some sort of big joke.
Harry forced the black rage down again. That's when I realized that everyone who was supposed to protect me was actually crazy, and they wouldn't listen to me no matter how much I begged them, and that I couldn't ever rely on them to get anything right. Sometimes good intentions weren't enough. Sometimes you had to be sane. There was a long silence. Harry took the time to breathe deeply and calm himself down. There was no point in getting angry. All parents were like that. No adult would give up so much status as to place themselves on level ground with a child. His genetic parents would have been no different. Sanity was a tiny spark in the night, an infinitesimally rare exception to the rule and dominion of madness. So there was no point in getting angry. Harry didn't like himself when he was angry.
Thank you for sharing that, Mr. Potter, said McGonagall after a while.
There was an abstracted look on her face, almost exactly the same look that had appeared on Harry's own face while experimenting on the pouch, if Harry had only seen himself in a mirror to realize that.
I shall have to think about this.
She turned toward the alley mouthway and raised her wand.
Harry said, can we go get the healer's kit now?
McGonagall paused and looked back at him steadily.
And if I say no, it's too expensive and you won't need it, what happens?
Harry's face twisted in bitterness. Exactly what you're thinking, Professor McGonagall. Exactly what you're thinking. I conclude you're another crazy adult I can't talk to, and I start planning how to get my hands on a healer's kit anyway.
I am your guardian on this trip, McGonagall said with a tinge of danger. I will not allow you to push me around.
I understand, Harry said. He kept the resentment out of his voice and didn't say any of the other things that came to mind. McGonagall had told him to think before he spoke. He probably wouldn't remember that tomorrow, but he could at least remember it for 5 minutes. McGonagall's wand twitched and the noises of Diagon Alley came back.
All right, young man, she said. Let's go get that healer's kit.
Harry's jaw dropped in surprise. Then he hurried after her, almost stumbling in his sudden rush. End first half of chapter 6. Okay, I know that was slightly unexpected. In the same way that chapters 2 through 5 are among the shortest in the story, chapters 6 and 7 are among the longest. I discovered about halfway through this that I was not going to have the time to put out the entirety of chapter 6 in a single podcast. Therefore, I am splitting both chapter 6 and 7 into two parts. This will help to keep me sane, as post-production is less fun than recording and takes an order of magnitude more time. And also keeps these podcasts in my target 25 to 35 minute range. The original text for this chapter can be found at fanfiction.net or by googling Harry Potter and the Methods of Rationality, and there is also a link included in this file's description. If you enjoy this podcast, please help spread the word or leave a review at iTunes. If you're interested in learning more about the art of rationality, please visit lesswrong.com, an online community of aspiring rationalists founded by Eliezer Yudkowsky. Some sound effects used are courtesy of the Free Sound Project. A link to the attributions page is found in this file's description. The music used is Catch That Goblin by Skaven. Questions and comments can be sent to hpmorpodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening, and come back next week for part 2 of Chapter 6, The Planning Fallacy.